Next case, 96-2137, Craig Branham versus Cigna Healthcare, Ohio. Ms. Manoogian.
My name is Manoogian. I, along with Michael Manoogian, represent Cigna Healthcare of Ohio in this appeal and cross appeal. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Cigna's appeal presents the court with the issue of whether spouses loss of consortium claim should be arbitrated when the injured spouse has agreed to arbitrate. Mr. Branham's cross appeal presents the issue of whether the claim that Mr. Branham has asserted on behalf of his deceased wife, including claims for negligence, emotional distress, bad faith, and breach of contract, are subject to the arbitration provision at issue, which provides for the arbitration of any controversy arising out of or in connection with the joint service agreement. With respect to Cigna's appeal and the issue of whether Mr. Branham's loss of consortium should be arbitrated, the Court of Appeals ruled that the loss of consortium claim was not subject to arbitration because Mr. Branham had not agreed to arbitrate that claim. In so ruling, the Court of Appeals relied on this court's decision in Bowen v. Kilcare. In Bowen, this court held that a claim for loss of consortium could not be defeated by a release that had been given only by the injured spouse and not by the holder of the loss of consortium claim.
Because in the law it's recognized that the spouse has a separate cause of action.
The Bowen rule should not be extended to encompass agreements to arbitrate for at least 7 reasons. First, arbitration, unlike a release, does not defeat a loss of consortium claim. Arbitration simply provides a different form in which the loss of consortium claim would be heard. Second, ruling that a loss of consortium claim is subject to arbitration would comport with Ohio's strong public policy, which this court has long recognized, of favoring arbitration as an expeditious and economical means of resolving disputes. Third, such a ruling would avoid time-consuming and costly litigation and would preserve judicial economy. A dispute would be heard once in arbitration instead of twice in arbitration and in civil action.
Is the order to arbitrate a final appealable order?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
Why?
It's statutory under Ohio Revised Code Section 1.
So it's a special proceeding,
yes.
Clearly. Does it affect a substantial right?
I would say,
because there are two prongs to that section of 250502.
I believe, Your Honor, that the provision of the Ohio Revised Code that makes this type of decision a final appealable order is contained in the arbitration section. It's 2711, I believe, 02.
Okay, now you ended up getting it referable to arbitration in the trial court.
Yes, sir.
The Court of Appeals reverses in part.
Just with respect to the loss of consortium claim, which gave rise to our...
Yeah, I understand. So at this point, we have before us, in effect, an order to arbitrate the decedent's claims, but no order to arbitrate the consortium claim. Is an order not to arbitrate a final appeal order?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Well, I'm wondering why you appealed. I guess that's where we're going with this, because I'm going to ask them, would they have appealed had you not appealed? Would they have appealed had you not appealed? Because it seems that obviously the trial court or the Court of Appeals followed the Kilcare case. I know what your arguments are that they didn't, but clearly it's a separate cause of action, and if they had ignored the Bowen case, then there had been reason to really dispute that. But you want the whole thing now reversed.
I just want the portion of the Court of Appeals ruling that held the lawsuit abortion claim not to be arbitrable to be reversed, and of course affirmed on the other portion of the decision. The third reason that the Bowen rule should not be extended to encompass claims to arbitrate is that such a ruling would hold time-consuming, costly litigation, and would preserve judicial economy.
Counsel, could I interrupt you? Get you to the other part, not your appeal, but your defense of the other appeal. These sorts of clauses to arbitrate insurance about any kinds of insurance claims to me seem to be related to coverage, that these issues typically are coverage issues. Now, thus saying, isn't that what do you foresee being the issue that the arbitrator will hear? Will it be coverage?
Your Honor, under this group service agreement, the insured requested a
prenotification. So what will the arbitrator decide? Whether or not that is the decline to permit that particular procedure was something outside the policy, would it violate the policy? Isn't that the only issue that should be arbitrated under this clause?
Your Honor, I would say no. The arbitration provision of the group service agreement provides for the arbitration of any claim that arises out of or in connection with the group service agreement.
But it all boils down to all the claims by this receipt and her spouse involved. You should have, it's what the insurer was obligated to do. In their view, the insurer should have approved it and should have even declined it sooner. I mean, but it's really should have approved it. Now, if an arbitrator determines as a preliminary matter that the insurer was not in violation of contract for declining to approve that procedure, don't all the other claims fall then? Because they all are based on a negligent or an intentional failure to do something that the insurer was obliged to do.
Yeah.
A duty.
Yeah.
So isn't the only issue for an arbitrator, the arbitrator won't really determine whether this is intentional infliction or any of those things. The arbitrator will decide whether that procedure was to be covered and should have been approved.
That's one issue, but if the arbitrator were to determine that the woman should have been provided the surgery, then the next step for the arbitrator was to determine
all the damages flowing therefrom under these claims.
Or was Cigna's handling and refusal of this woman's claim somehow tortious for her? But the tort claims arise out of something that Cigna did under the group service agreement.
Well, they're derivative of the failure to approve.
I'm more concerned about the length of time in which it takes the company to determine the question. It would appear that in the lengthy procedure, the person is either dead or the person is to such a state that the answer to the question is immaterial. So isn't there some negligence
Isn't there some problem with the length of time that the insurer takes to answer this question?
Your Honor, I know after the issues crossed the Collins Bridge, they made the argument that you have picked up on that somehow the administrative scheme embodied within this contract is unconscionable. The agreement is in our supplement, and the agreement provides that health care services except emergency services have to be pre-approved by Cigna. Now, emergency services do not require pre-approval, do not go through the grievance or arbitration procedure.
Was this an emergency procedure?
Well, emergency services are defined in the group service agreement as those required to treat a serious illness that may result in serious medical complications or loss of life.
So you say then the patient was at fault for not going ahead and having the procedure done and then determine later whether it would be paid for by the insurance company?
The patient had the option, Your Honor, because of the broad language defining emergency services, to have done just what you suggested.
Is that what the insurance company sees as the obligation on the insured, that they go ahead and get the procedure and worry about the payment later? Is that what is contemplated by the insurance agreement?
Your Honor, all I can say is that the insurance agreement defines emergency services and that no pre-approval is required if it is an emergency, a life or death.
And you say that this procedure is clearly outlined in the policy as that meeting the emergency situation.
I think that the preoperative surgery would have fallen in the definition of emergency.
Did anyone at the insurance company tell the patient that this falls under the emergency clause in the policy and go ahead and have it done?
Your Honor, I do not know that. This case, when it was filed...
Well, no, isn't it the obligation of the insurance company to quickly determine in a situation of this type what the coverage is? And you're not saying it completely, but you're intimating to me that this procedure is clearly covered by the emergency provision of the company, and that they should have gone ahead and had done.
They could have.
Why didn't then the insurance company say when they were presented with the claim, it is covered under the emergency provision, go ahead and have it done?
Your Honor, on the state of the record, I do not know whether Cigna did or did not tell.
Oh, you're telling us that the insured was at fault for not taking the initiative to have this done, because here now at hindsight, you say this is clearly covered by the emergency provision. That person should have gone ahead and done it when you could have easily eliminated all the controversy by when it first came to your attention, telling the insured, listen, go ahead and have it done. It's covered underneath the emergency provision. What is your answer to that?
Your Honor, I really don't have an answer to that. It's
okay.
It's possible.
I understand.
I'm going to go back to the issue on the loss of consortium claim. But the fourth reason that the Bowen rule should be extended to encompass, should not be extended to encompass the loss of consortium claim, is to avoid the possibility of inconsistent outcomes that could result in injured spouse's claim were arbitrated and the other spouse's claim for loss of consortium were litigated in separate proceedings. Fifth,
requiring arbitration of a lump consortium claim would preserve marital harmony and would avoid getting a spouse who desires to litigate potential lump consortium claims veto power over the other spouse's contract. For example, if, to avoid litigation, one contracting party determined to place a provision in a contract requiring both spouses to agree to arbitrate, one spouse's refusal to agree to arbitrate could affect the other spouse's ability to obtain the contract.
Say that again.
Could do what?
If, to avoid litigation, one contracting party determined to place a provision in a contract requiring both spouses to agree to arbitrate, one spouse's refusal to...
Did this woman do that?
No.
Well, why are we talking about it?
Well, there are policy reasons that other courts have adopted for requiring the arbitration of a loss of consortium claim. And these are, that's just one of the reasons. Since requiring arbitration of a loss of consortium claim where health care is an issue would safeguard the right of the insured to health care benefits. For example, if to avoid litigation, an insurer determined to obtain agreements to arbitrate from each insured spouse, and an insured spouse refused to agree to arbitrate, that refusal could affect the insured's ability to receive health care benefits. And finally, seven.
Is that one present here?
No, it is not.
Okay. How many more you got that aren't present?
She only has seven.
So, one more.
Yes, sir.
I think she's getting policy reasons.
Exactly.
What it is now.
And finally, ruling that a loss of consortium claim is subject to arbitration would alleviate burden that insurers and other contracting parties who wish to arbitrate rather than litigate would face if they were forced to monitor the marital status of their insurers and obtain agreements to arbitrate from each insured spouse.
You've used your time, Ms. Nugent. Mr. Mary.
Under the policy that Mrs. Branham had, was this procedure ever, or could it ever have been termed an emergency type procedure?
Your Honor, I suggest that if she was proceeded on an emergency basis, we'd be here in this court arguing that it wasn't an emergency. He said she should have gotten pre-approval. In fact, Dr. Ellison, the surgeon at Ohio State, called Cigna early in January to solicit Cigna's approval. Now, whether they talked about emergency or what, or what, we'll never know. But he clearly asked well in advance whether Cigna would approve this procedure, and the answer was, we'll get back to you 30 days later with no input from a physician that we determined. They said, no, this is experimental and we're not going to do it. Then we appealed. They contracted with two oncologists, both of whom said this is an accepted procedure. So with respect to the argument that this is an emergency, should have proceeded under the emergency procedure. Typically, in my experience, what we're talking about there is a car accident, the person bleeding to death, and yes, you can go to the emergency room and be stitched up without prior approval of insurance.
Mr. Mayor, I didn't see it in the briefs, and perhaps it's not in the record. Do we know from the record whether the hospital here would have provided the treatment without the insurance coverage?
That's in the record in Patty Branham's affidavit. She specifically asked them to do the surgery and pass it with the insurance company later. They said it's too expensive. We can't do that. We have to have money or insurance from the insurance company up front.
The hospital said that.
Counselor, I vote to take this case in on the merit issue, too, because I think that we need to start thinking about this managed health care and HMOs and PHOs, whatever they are, and I thought I didn't know enough about it, and we ought to get some information. Now we're down to really a procedural question on arbitration. If we're going to argue the case on that issue, my first question to you is, on what basis did you file the appeal, and did the other side move to dismiss it on the basis of no final appealable order?
The other side did not procedural standpoint, we filed the case in the trial court.
I understand.
They moved the court for an order to stay or dismiss. The court stated.
Right.
We appealed. There was no motion to dismiss.
Okay.
The appeal.
Okay. So we appealed, and there was no motion to dismiss. On what basis do you find that to be a final appealable order?
I think two bases, Your Honor. Number one, the impairment of access to courts and the right to a jury trial is a fundamental right. Secondly, the statute, I think, and that expresses the General Assembly's recognition that we're talking about a fundamental right. Here, the statute expressly states that a decision to compel arbitration is a final appealable order.
Where does it say that?
I think that's 27.11.15
provides for an appeal to be taken from an order confirming and modifying, and we have said in the Stewart case that even and two of us dissented in that case, but even a trial court order which vacates an arbitration award orders the parties to select new arbitrators, conduct a new arbitration proceeding isn't a final appealable order. And two of us dissented in that case where I wrote and said that it's a special proceeding and affects a substantial right, but that wasn't the majority. Now here we don't even have an award. We just have an order to arbitrate, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and your position is clearly that the statute says that it's appealable.
I believe 27.11.15.
When any action is brought upon any issue referable to arbitration, under an agreement in writing for the court in which the action is pending, and that's the one you're talking about, may
yes.
stay it.
Yes.
Okay.
And tell me about this fundamental right that arbitration violates a fundamental right in our state?
Our Constitution provides, Your Honor, that people have the right to access the courts, the right to trial by jury.
So arbitration and the statutes and the policy favoring it would be unconstitutional?
The arbitration statutes provide that just like anything else, just like the death penalty case we had here just before this case, that right to trial by jury can be waived, but the waiver has to be knowing, intelligent, and voluntarily made, and there's nothing in the record here that indicates there was ever an agreement to arbitrate and ever a decision to waive jury trial.
To get there to that fundamental right, you have to say that this in each individual in a group policy is that your claim that every individual in this case, Mrs. Grant, would have had to personally sign a waiver?
I think that Mrs. Grant's right to a jury trial is personal. Yes, Your Honor, I do. I don't think it can be waived by an employer or by a lawyer.
Is there any case that says that?
Well, we cited the case in our reply brief, the Supreme Court case in Alexander Gardner that stated that statutory claims had to be waived by an individual, couldn't be waived by
a lawyer. What was the claim in that case?
The claim in that, there was a statutory claim for, I think brought under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act.
Okay.
The issue that was presented to the U.S. Supreme Court in that case was whether or not the union agreement that compelled arbitration in effect waived the individual union members' statutory right to a trial on a Title VII claim, and the Supreme Court held that it could be waived if it was personal.
That's, and the court said the argument is that's entirely analogous to this situation.
I think it's very analogous to this situation.
Just one further thing on the procedural issue. 27.11.02 says an order under this section that grants or denies a trial any action pending arbitration, including but not limited to an order based upon determination of court the party has waived arbitration, is a final order and may be reviewed, affirmed, modified, and so forth. To the extent not in conflict with these rules, Chapter 2505 of the revised code. 250502 is the final appealable order that has certain requirements.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we have said in both the Stewart case and in Bel Air City Schools, all the way back to 1979, order of a trial court which stays all proceedings before it, pursuant to 271102, compels arbitration between the parties, is not a final appealable order pursuant to 250502, when it does not, in effect, determine the action and prevent a judgment. Okay, just, I just wondered if anybody had moved for, to dismiss or has even looked at the case law and final appealable orders with regard to arbitration proceedings.
It was an issue not raised at all. To address the cross appeal, just for a moment, Bowen versus Killcare fairly well disposes of the claims of the direct appeal of the Cigna. Bowen turned on straightforward contract law. The holding there was the spouse was not a party to the contract, therefore the spouse can be bound by the contract. And that's analogous to the situation here, even if you find Tag Branham. Did agree to arbitrate.
Counsel, since the husband, I guess, you'd ask the question about whether or not the husband was covered under this contract. Is he entitled to health care under this group contract? Wouldn't that be pretty important? Because of the idea that someone would opt in for the coverage but opt out for the arbitration clause? Do we know if he...
We don't have the answer.
Is he insured?
I don't have the answer to that question. I guess I would say that if, unless he actually was a party to the agreement...
I know that, your argument, but does the record show whether he's insured?
The record does not show either way. The one document that is in the record is the document that Patty Branham used to enroll for health care. I don't believe the listing has been sure, but I have to look at it. That's in the record.
Counsel, I'm interested in just going back, I think, to the question that Justice Sweeney asked. Is the mechanism in place to get a prompt answer to a request such as this?
If this insurance policy is held by this court to be valid in all respects, you can't get an answer before the patient dies. By the time Cigna had finished its review 2 months down the road, Patty's tumors were inoperable. To take 30 days to get an answer, to take 30 days more to get an appeal.
Is there no provision for an expedited process when I assume there would have been uniform medical agreements that expedited answers here are critical?
There's no procedure in contracts. Patty came to me in early February after the appeal had been initially denied. I was on the phone to Cigna several times after that, urging them to speed the process, urging them to give me some kind of answer. And that's what makes health insurance different than any other insurance, different than any other contract, because the insurer doesn't just sit up there and after the battle is over decides who gets the money. The insurer is a participant in the battle. And by requiring pre-approval, and doctors will not do surgery, they've been around this block long enough, they won't do surgery if the insurance company won't pre-approve it and promise to pay. So by requiring pre-approval, and then by requiring an appeal process and an arbitration, you're never going to get to court for people that have cancer. Except after she's dead and we're deciding whether there was any damage.
Did you raise this point in the lower courts?
Yes. We argued it in the trial court. Well, principally in the trial court, the argument turned on that there was no breach. There's no evidence in the record that there was a breach.
So what about the argument that Revised Code 124.81 authorizes the state and the Department of Administrative Services to negotiate on behalf of its employees and customers and bond to the terms of contract? Are you alleging 124.81 is unconstitutional?
I think if the state under 124 has the authority to waive the right to a trial by jury of a participant, a very, very very well may be not only violative of the state constitution, but of the United States.
Did you challenge the constitutionality of that statute before the state before you was there?
We did not.
So that case really is not before us, is it?
The right to trial by jury has been before you on all the way up on the record, but not specific to the constitutionality.
But you did not challenge the state statute that gives the authority to make this contract first.
That's correct. We challenged the statute 2711.01 to the extent that the court reads that that statute is empowering the state or anyone else to compel arbitration as being unconstitutional.
Yeah, I thought your argument here was that Mrs. Branham could not waive Mr. Branham's right to sue in common pleas court for consortium. That's not a constitutional issue, isn't
that's
it?
That's not a constitutional issue. That's just Bowen versus Gilbert.
Right, yeah.
The record seems to indicate that only Branham and her daughter are involved.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. That was my recollection.
Counsel, coming back to the question I have, that this is a group policy with an arbitration clause relating to the issue of coverage.
Yes.
What's the quickest that you can get to the point of having an independent outside third party arbitrator address the question of coverage? If your client was attempting to fast track this, exercising all the rights under the contract, what's the quickest you can get this?
Setting aside the claim and appeal process, once we get to arbitration, the insurance contract provided for AAA arbitration rules, which involve contacting AAA, making a filing, agreeing on arbitrators, and so on. If the insurance company is cooperative, I suppose they can appoint a counsel and you can get an arbitrator. The parties can agree to arbitration, but you've got the problem of getting everybody together, getting the doctors together, give the testimony, all that sort of stuff. That wouldn't be all that different than if we had to go to court to get a preliminary judgment. I guess I think the better rule would be if Cigna thinks that it needs to have an arbitration commission to keep itself out of court, Cigna ought to approve the procedure to pay for it, and then we'll arbitrate later whether the insurance guys pay Cigna back. At least that's what's comparing the process. It doesn't make it life or death issue. It makes it an economic issue.
Can we get to the issue in this case that people who are not direct signatories to a contract are not bound by those provisions? For instance, here, at least the record, part of the record that we have shows that she had no idea that there was an arbitration clause in there. I'm not sure I know what's in my policy with regard to that because it's a group policy. Are we bound by those provisions where we're not signatory to it? Or can we even get to that issue? Because that's the one that concerns me.
I think there are several levels of issues you can get to here. The troubling issue to me about the agreement is that it's not clear that there was an agreement by anybody. The state agreed with Cigna that insurance would be provided to these people, but there's nothing to indicate that the state bargained for a binding arbitration provision.
Okay, well, forget the state. I buy the insurance by virtue of deduction from my pay.
Sure.
My contract is with Cigna. Doesn't have to be with Cigna, but it's was with Blue Cross, and I don't even know who it is now. But so the contract is between the insurer and me, and I have to accept, pursuant to the state plan, what I have, what they have. Now, is that contract between the two of us, even though I'm not signatory to it, I pay the premiums, maybe I ought to be bound by it.
I think there is a contract between you and Cigna for the provision of health coverage, certainly. I don't think it necessarily follows that everything Cigna wants to stick into its documents, binding it. You're obligated to pay the premiums, they're obligated to provide you the health care.
Okay, so that's what I'm asking you. So what you're saying is then that we can pick and choose. You would say you could pick and choose which portions you're bound by.
I think the issue is if there's a provision in there that's not clearly bargained for, and that's this case, it goes back to what the agreement was. Patty Branham signed up and agreed to pay premiums for health insurance. She didn't sign up and agree to pay premiums so that she'd be stuck with binding.
Well, was 30 days in the 30-day hospital stay as opposed to 90 in another contract not clearly bargained for?
I think it's fairly within the contemplation of the parties as opposed to a binding arbitration clause. I mean, consumers understand that insurance is going to have different deductibles, different co-payments, and that sort of stuff. I don't think consumers understand that they're giving up their right to a jury trial when they buy health insurance.
So you would, I guess I'm having difficulty with your suggestion that each person who is covered under an insurance contract, such as Cigna, can subjectively decide that they don't like this provision, they didn't know about it, and so they choose to not be bound by it? Is that?
No, Your Honor, I don't think
that's a new law. That'd be a new law of contract, wouldn't it?
Sure would. I don't think it's the individual choice that makes the decision here. I think it's the law, the Constitution of Ohio, that says if you're going to waive a jury trial, it better be knowing, intelligent, voluntary. I don't view it as Patty Branham deciding, I don't want to be bound by this provision. I think it's Patty Branham saying, I can't be bound as a matter of law because it wasn't presented to me. I didn't have the chance to waive.
So each person then would have to be given a waiver, I guess, of some sort, and send that back to the
I think that's correct.
Company
that's,
or
that's not any different than we do when we require an obvious waiver in uninsured motorist cases. I mean, it's very clear by statute. That's got to be clearly expressed, but it's not. We only apply that waiver.
Counsel, doesn't the theory just take us absolutely nowhere? I mean, it maybe wins your case for your client, but if that were holding to this court, then every year, healthcare provider, every insurance company that covers healthcare would immediately implement a plan that says you sign this or you don't get to participate in our coverage. I assume that they all have these kind of things in them now. I don't know whether that's correct or incorrect, but I'll bet they do. And wouldn't that be the response to that? So it's a one-case deal. That's what you do.
Well, we've also argued in our brief that there are some provisions in the contract that shouldn't be in there as a matter of public policy. Number one, an agreement to arbitrate on a pre-approval basis just delays the stretch out so long that just shouldn't be valid as a matter of policy. Secondly, the bad faith claim. The essence of a bad faith claim is the insurer not only breached, but breached it intentionally, willfully, and fraudulently. And we shouldn't allow an insurer to hold the insurer to the portion of the contract that says bind and arbitrate, and allow the insurer to breach it.
You've used your time, Mr. Murray, and you want to save some time for rebuttal on your cross. Count on about 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Manoogian, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds for rebuttal.
Yeah, counsel, I have a question. The other side essentially wants us to knock this out on the right remedy theory. She has no remedy. Isn't the problem here in this kind of arbitration clause where the issue is coverage, and where I think you would agree if coverage is denied, it probably means the service is effectively denied unless you're independently wealthy, that effective right to remedy is not present unless you have a expedited procedure for getting right to arbitration if the posture of your company is denial of coverage.
That if there's a denial of for coverage, then yes, you have to file a complaint with Cigna within 7 days. You get an answer to that complaint. If you don't like the answer to the complaint, within 31 days, you get an answer to, you can file an appeal and get an answer to your appeal. So within 38 days, you know, am I going to arbitration or am I
going to... Okay, but you really need to, if you're going to have an effective remedy, you need that third-party intervention very quickly.
And there is no reason why the arbitration can't occur immediately after you get your decision. You know, Cigna is an insurance company. It is not out to get its insurance. It is there to benefit its insurance. And this insurance policy, in emergency life and death situations, provides for immediate care. Go and get your care.
You just added life and death, which I didn't hear before. This is a life and death situation. Somebody who has cancer who wants a treatment that could be life, not isn't always, but oftentimes it's life and death.
That would qualify as emergency under the definition of emergency in the policy.
But that didn't seem to occur here. Is that, did we establish that before?
Okay. Right, it did not occur here, but that's not to say that just because in this case Patricia Branham and her physicians determined to pursue the pre-approval route does not mean that Cigna's policy and administrative scheme is unconscionable. Cigna provided $83,000 worth of benefits to this very old woman, and it is very, very sad that she died, but that does not make Cigna's policy administrative scheme unconscionable for this court to so declare. There's a mechanism to get a prompt answer in the policy, and she enrolled, she was bound by it. She can't pick and choose $83,000 worth of benefits.
But it would appear that she certainly did everything in her power to get a quick answer. I mean, you can stand here and tell us that there are these procedures in the insurance policy, but here is a lady who really tried to get this treatment, and she was told no. So you're arguing some different idealistic fact situation under an insurance. We know that didn't happen, and we know we don't have a person in this particular instance who did nothing. She tried to get this relief that you're telling us that is so available under this insurance policy. So stick to the facts of this case.
She tried to get the procedure. And
the insurance company, under your scenario, should have said, why, of course, this is an emergency treatment. Go ahead. Didn't happen.
Did not happen. We would request that the court reverse the court of appeals on the loss of consortium issue and rule that Mr. Graham's loss of consortium claim is arbitrable and confirm the trial court and the court of appeals on the issue of whether Mrs. Graham's tort claims should be subject to arbitration.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Manoogian. Mr. Murray, 30 seconds. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.